Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, when you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and I've got a question for you guys.
You do?
Yay.
What's the biggest city you've ever been to?
New York City.
Yeah, New York.
Are you sure? Did you actually check the numbers?
I haven't. London might be bigger. Is London bigger,
no,
guys?
London's smaller, significantly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
that was kind of a surprise to me when we were doing research for this episode. I assumed London was bigger than it actually is.
Well, part of the problem is defining what a city is, right? Because the perception of what a city is versus what it legally is are two different things. Just as a quick aside, before we even get into the topic. So Atlanta, for example, not that big of a city. I live actually in the city limits of Atlanta.
Me too.
All right, so we're all three in the city limits of Atlanta. But about 5 years ago, I lived just outside the city limits. And the thing about it is that I would still tell people I live in Atlanta. I still thought of it as Atlanta. And in fact, I noticed something interesting, that the further away from Atlanta a person lived, the bigger the city seemed to be. So, for example, you might live inside what we call the perimeter. That's 285. It's a highway that circles not just the city of Atlanta, but some of the metropolitan area immediately around it. And someone outside of that would refer to anything inside 285 as Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Someone living in, say, part of Decatur might say, oh, well, I live in Decatur. Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, is down the street.
But, you know, when I lived in Decatur, if I was talking to somebody who didn't live in town, I would just tell them I lived in Atlanta.
Right.
So that the answer made sense
exactly.
to them.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, the further out you would go, the bigger the city would be. So I know people who live pretty far up in northern Georgia who would think of Gwinnett, which is a suburb of Atlanta, as being Atlanta. That is also Atlanta.
Yeah.
No, but it's not.
Not to people who live in Atlanta.
Yeah. In Gwinnett is where you, like, get lost looking for a flea market you heard about.
Or a Chinese restaurant or et cetera.
Yeah. It's where you go and you drive to 8 different chain restaurants, all of which have a 45-minute wait, and you think, what? Where am I?
I apologize. I didn't mean to slam Gwinnett. I'm sure it's just full of absolutely lovely people.
Yes,
it is.
Yes, it's way out there.
Yeah, and our point being that even all of us who live within the city limits, I think there's at least 7 miles as the crow flies between each of our houses.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where defining what is the actual city is a bit of a tricky situation. And the reason why we're even talking about it, why the seemingly weird tangent is happening, is because we're going to talk about mega cities today. Now, these are enormous cities, and the same problem of defining what is a mega city exists on that scale as it does with something like Atlanta, which does not merit, it is not a mega city.
Sure, because technically a mega city has to have a population of over 10 million people to be considered a megacity. But where do you draw those lines?
Yeah, because as it turns out, when we call something a megacity, it's not necessarily the political or you know, the boundary of a city. It's the urban development around it where, from an outsider's perspective, you come into the outside areas of that sprawl. That's where you start saying, this is the city of whatever. And a megacity can also be not just a single entity, but it could be two cities that have grown outward so that their edges now meet.
A lot of what you're talking about actually points to a larger principle that might be something that's good to start with here.
Sure.
Which is that in many ways, the cities we live in today are largely accidental.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they grew out of settlements that arose for some reason. They might have been on a river where there was a good place to load and unload cargo.
Sure.
Or
mm-hmm.
they might have been at the center of where some railroad lines met.
Yep.
Or at the end, like Terminus,
right.
which is the old name for Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Or they might have been at a good port where there was a place to, again, load and unload cargo.
Yeah, it seems to be mostly based around economic transportation, but
right, so there are these kind of strange ways in which many of the cities we live in today are the result of this strange growth process that we don't even fully plan or understand all the time. Like, we live in an urbanization age.
Yes.
This is the age of moving to the big city. And it's not just where we live. This is a trend that's happening all over the world.
Oh, yeah. More all over the world than right here, really.
Sure.
That's true.
Like, if you go back a couple hundred years to, like, 1800, what percentage of the people on Earth were living in urban areas, like in cities?
3%.
3%.
97%
of the humans.
97% were living in places that you would not describe as an urban area. So not a city or a large town. We're talking people who are living out in small villages or even on, individual farmland, kind of thing.
Real one Starbucks town kind of places.
Right. Where if
what
you were
was
living
the 1800 equivalent of Starbucks?
It was a horse. I think if your town had a horse in it, that was a big deal.
Yeah. I heard about those one horse towns.
So if you go 100 years after that, you go to 1900. So now the Industrial Revolution is underway, right? We're seeing a
people
major
were meeting
change.
Each other on the road. Like, do you have smog yet? We have smog.
Let me show you. So by then, 100 years going by, it went from 3% to 14% of the world's population. And at that time, about a dozen cities had populations of a million or more people in it. So now we're talking about an era where we've got some pretty large cities for the time. And just we're starting to see this trend of people seeing an opportunity to make a living doing something in a city. Also, mechanization is starting to take some of the load off of agriculture, meaning that there are fewer jobs out in the more remote areas. So you've got a double incentive to try and find your way, possibly moving to the big city.
Right. But new types of jobs are coming into being in a lot of these would-be urban-based jobs, like some manufacturing-type jobs or new knowledge-based jobs.
Right. So if we move up to 1950, so now we're just going 50 more years, it had more than doubled. We're talking about 30% of the world's population living in cities.
In 1900, it was 14%.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And in 1950, 30% of the world's population was about 746 million people. And that also happens to be when the growth of rural populations started to officially slow. It hadn't quite peaked yet, but the UN expects it to begin reversing by 2020. Today, there are 54% of the world's population living in urban areas.
So how many is that?
Some 3.9 billion.
3.9 billion people living in urban areas now, whether you define that as a city or the suburb of a city or a large town, that sort of stuff. So the World Health Organization actually predicts that between 2015 and 2020, we'll have a growth rate of urban population of 1.84%. That's global, like if you were to average everything out.
Uh-huh.
And then that would actually slow down and continue to slow down over the next few years. So between 2020 and 2025, the growth rate would be 1.63%. And 25 to 30, it would be 1.44%. And if you look at the globe, these different regions have very different percentages. Like the overall percentage of the globe, like Lauren said, has 54% of the population living in urban areas. In North America, it skews way more to the urban areas. It's 82% of the population of North America lives in an urban area.
Right.
But if you look in areas like Asia and Africa, it's closer to 40%. So it all depends on where you are looking. It's a trend that is going to continue, and it's going faster in some places. Some places significantly faster than others.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 1900, we said that there were 12 cities that had populations of a million or more. How many is it today?
More than 400.
Oof.
More than 400 cities with a population of a million or more people. And there are the megacities, like you mentioned, Lauren, those are the ones that have 10 million people in them. We now have about 28 of those. By 2020, we may have as many as 40. Estimations vary because it's very difficult to predict exactly how sustainable some of these growth trends are. And there are some who think that, Chicago, which has been hovering just beneath megacity levels, like they have around 9 million something in their population, may top that by 2020. But other cities like London, which has also been hovering just under megacity for the actual city, well, not the actual city of London, for Greater London, they might also hit that level.
Yeah, there was another estimate I found that was, according to the UN, again, there are going to be a predicted 41 megacities on Earth with populations exceeding 10 million by 2030.
Right. Yeah, so again, the estimations, obviously they're estimations, so they vary depending upon what data people are looking at and how they are breaking that down.
And they change from year to year, so that's exciting too.
Yeah, because I mean, all sorts of stuff factors can, I mean, things like natural disasters, weather patterns, wars. I mean, all these very complex issues will clearly make a huge impact on these growth rates. Also, what's interesting to me is that while 54% of the world's population live in cities, if you look at just megacities and say, all right, well, what percentage of the population lives in megacities? It's 6.7%. So megacities, while they are huge, and, you know, you look at this and you're like, wow, 10 million people or more are living in this megacity, it still represents 6.7%
of the world's population.
Right.
But that number is growing.
Yes. It is. And we will expect that to continue to grow, both as existing megacities grow larger and new megacities come into being as the smaller I hate to use the word smaller. That doesn't even make sense. These already large cities boom into megacities. There's some other predictions that are really interesting to me. The United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs says that by 2050, nearly 70% of the world's population will be living in urban areas. So we'll continue to see that increase from 54% up to 70%. And that, at that time, the population is expected to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 billion people. So that means the number of people who are living in cities by the year 2050 will be the same as the number of people who are alive on the planet right now. So if we took everyone who's alive right now and put them in a city, that's essentially the number of people who will be living in cities by 2050, according to the United Nations.
Well, let's start bussing people in and see if they'll fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could fit another 20 or 30 people in this room alone.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, as long as they don't mind, you know, not touching the floor, like just be stacked on top of one another.
But no, I mean that's a joke, but also a kind of horrifying actual question of how are we going to fit all of these people into these areas and what on earth are we going to do with them?
Right. And I would say it's not so much a question of physically fitting, like you're packing a trunk.
In some areas, it kind of is, but we're lucky enough to not really have that problem in middle class Atlanta. But
yeah, I think the issue is more thinking about what a city is.
Right.
I mean, a city is not your resource production landscape; it is your resource consumption landscape, and it makes lots of things. It makes knowledge. It creates economic value in plenty of ways. But the raw resources that your population uses don't typically come from cities. And how could they? You need farmlands to create food.
Or quarries to mine stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And that's going to come from the wider landscape. So as you think about cities, it's kind of interesting to think about basically you're moving more and more consumption into tiny areas farther and farther away from where resources are produced.
And beyond that, you're also expanding outward the borders of the urban environment. That's why a lot of these studies talk about urban environments as opposed to cities, because the term city has a very specific meaning. If you are being really, you know, strict about it, you're talking about the borders of a municipality. And when we say the city of, you know, when we say New York City, we're really not just meaning the New York City, like where the borders would stop. We mean the entire metropolitan area around New York City. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we were to limit ourselves to just the definitive, this, you know, city, then the numbers would be totally different when you start looking at the top megacities that are out there. So whether it's a concentrated urban environment around a large city like New York City is, or it's more of a kind of a convergence of two different cities. We've got different terms for that as well to kind of explain those.
Okay, what's Dallas-Fort Worth? Why is that just one city now?
That would be I would argue that Dallas – well, I guess it all depends on your perspective, right? You've got like the Metroplex. A Metroplex would be an urban environment made up of two different cities that are more or less – or two or more cities that are more or less on the same level already. So you wouldn't say that one city is predominantly – you know, this was the big anchor city and these other ones just got swallowed up by the sprawl, right?
Yeah, it's like a – binary star system.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just that the spheres of influence have now overlapped one another. So Baltimore and Washington, D.C., this is absolutely the case. Lauren, I remember we went up to when we went up to visit the Discovery headquarters back when HowStuffWorks was part of Discovery Communications, we took a bus from – or I guess it was a cab from the D.C. area all the way into Baltimore to where – or actually beyond Baltimore to – Silver Spring, I think it was.
But yeah. She never left town.
No, you're the whole time. Yeah. The whole time you're just like, okay, I see.
And
no.
Now there's more city, and now there's more city, and now there are different monuments and more city.
Yeah, there's no differentiation really. Mm-hmm. You know, you never felt like you had left one city and now you're entering another. You
not
just
that
felt
freeway
like
exit landscape.
Yeah. So that would be a Metroplex. Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill is another great example. You know, that's sometimes called the Triangle. Mm-hmm. And but it's the same sort of thing. Then you've also got a conurbation, which is where
that's the best word, I've got to say. Yeah. It's the least awkward best word ever.
Conurbation. Yeah. It doesn't make me think that I'm like there's got to be a different way to pronounce that, right?
No, I can see that it's con, so with, and then urbation.
Yeah. And so it's more or less
conurbation?
Continuous urban environment.
Yes.
So we're talking about cities, suburbs, towns, everything getting swallowed up. That I would argue Metro Atlanta falls into that category. It's obviously it's not a mega city. We don't have a population that would put us into that category. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a map of the metropolitan Atlanta area, there are a lot of little towns that are essentially swallowed up by the city.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Same thing with Boston or San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a look really quickly about at the top five cities by population. Now, this is according to the World Atlas. Again, depending upon what resource you use, you may see a different ranking, and it's also because it's all on how you define the city. So if you're defining it as the metropolitan area around a particular core, that's going to give you a different number than if you limit yourself to a specific city. So number one on the list is Tokyo, Japan. It is the largest mega city with 37,126,000 people in it.
I do not even understand that number.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, this again doesn't just mean the established historical borders of Tokyo. It also is the metropolitan area around it. Now, the population density is 6,038 people per square kilometer, or 15,600 people per square mile. Every square mile.
Is 15, that a 000. Lot?
Yes.
That's a whole bunch. Yep.
As someone who walks a few miles each day, the thought of, if I were to walk a square mile and think 15,000 people are inside of that would be pretty incredible. However, that's not as incredible as it gets. It gets more so. So, again, the city is number one if you look at Tokyo and its surrounding areas. The actual population within the established borders of what is Tokyo is closer to 9 million. So if you were being really super strict and saying, no, I'm just talking about traditional Tokyo, it would not even be a megacity. It would be 9 million people. It wouldn't quite count. But no one reasonable would ever say that because, again, it's not like as soon as you cross the border, you go into like, oh, now it's pastoral Japan. That's not the way that works. So Tokyo itself is a collection of 23 smaller cities. They are called wards, and each of those has its own independent administration. This also makes it complex when you start talking about megacities, because you're often talking about lots of different political entities, all working within kind of vaguely defined areas. Like, you know, there are actual borders, that if you look on a map, you can see them. But when you are a person just moving through that environment, you may not see that distinction.
Also, the like material necessities of life don't necessarily obey the administrative borders that
right.
you have put up. Because so you've created a megacity and you just say, oh, we'll just divide it up like a pie into a bunch of smaller things that are easier to manage. You still have to get all the resources that a city this size needs to the area.
Oh, sure.
And you still have to find a way to provide all of the overlapping services a city of this size needs within the area.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can't just put water pipes for one ward of a city in that ward and have them not connect to any of the other water pipes in the area, for example.
That is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Because anyone who has ever seen anything about water rights knows this is incredibly complicated. And even neighboring towns that are technically within the same urban environment can have vicious fights over this sort of stuff, understandably, because this is a necessity, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, neighboring states have that argument sometimes.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and as these megacities grow, we're likely going to see more and more examples of megacities across state lines start to merge, where you can't see the difference between one city and the next, even as you're going from one state to the next, and that gets complicated.
Man, I bet it's no fun to be a megacity that's literally downriver of another megacity.
Probably yeah. not. Probably not.
Not great. So to kind of sum up with Tokyo, one of the things I wanted to point out is that some of the wards, you know, keeping in mind that number, that population density number I gave earlier, the 6,038 people per square kilometer, that was an average across Tokyo. Obviously, there are some wards that have a much higher density and some that have lower. One of the highest is Setagaya, which in 2007, there was a census that listed it having a density of 14,728 people per square kilometer. So if we convert that to square miles, that's 38,000 people in a square mile.
So twice.
Yeah.
More than twice what it is throughout the rest of Tokyo.
Yeah. If you were to, you know, the average, it's more than twice what the average is.
Whew.
Now, the other four cities that are in that top five, I'm not going to break them all down, but I'll tell you, you know, what they are and what their populations are. You have Jakarta, Indonesia, which has 26 million. People, Seoul, South Korea, 22,547,000, Delhi, India, which is 22,242,000, and Shanghai, China, 20,860,000. New York City, which is in fact the largest city I have ever visited, ranks at number 8. So it is a little bit further down on the list. It has 20,464,000 people living in the city and surrounding metropolitan area. Los Angeles, which I've also been to, number 17. But yeah, you know, London doesn't even count in megacities because of defining what is an actual city. London, in fact, is a particularly interesting one. If you look at the city of London, you want to be super official and really pedantic and say just the city of London. The city of London is tiny. It is about 1.12 square miles in
what?
Area.
It's yeah. basically inside Big Ben.
Kinda. I have walked through, like, from one edge side to the other, the city of London. It is not a big deal. But it is the core of the city. This is what had been established as the historical city of London, and then everything else grew up around it. But that was what had been established as the city.
Mm-hmm. So within that very strict city limit,
yeah.
how many people
fewer
are right
than
there?
12,000, 11,700. So definitely not a megacity, right? I mean, they just really dropped the ball on that.
But when we're talking about Greater London.
Yeah, you're looking at Greater London. That is around 7,172,036 people from a 2001 census.
Okay.
So obviously that has changed since then. And if you look at the London metropolitan area, again, depending on where you draw the line, where do you say, all right, well, this is now outside the metropolitan area, it's between 12 and 18 million. That's a big gap, right? That's a big difference on the low end and the high end. So clearly it gets complicated saying, all right, this still counts as part of the megacity versus this is now not part of the megacity. This is either too far out or separated by too many, you know, miles of only partially developed area or whatever, however you want to, you know, designate it. So yeah, if you were to look at the London metropolitan area and consider that as a whole, it would fit under megacity. But no one on any of the lists I looked at does that. they all look at more of the greater London area. This is a big deal because, like we were saying, you know, when you have different areas of the same urban environment under the direction of different political entities, whether it's a city government, a town council, whatever it may be, it makes the whole integration really complicated, especially when it comes to things like infrastructure.
And this is affecting more and more people. It's officially over half of the world's population is affected by this kind of urbanization.
Yeah, you can really think about this as that we're living in a period of transition, that we're actually fundamentally changing the way humanity occupies space. And it's happening very quickly from a historical timescale.
Sure. Yeah. And in fact, it's happening faster than what policy can keep up with. And, not that that's surprising. That happens all the time. We talk about that all the time on this show, where technology or other advances, science, that kind of stuff can quickly outpace legislation, for example. So I would imagine that this megacity trend is going to not only continue, but it's going to continue to be problematic.
Oh, absolutely. Because, some of the cities that we've been talking about, like New York, have had a really, in the scheme of the universe, I suppose a short time, but in the scheme of a city, a long time to kind of develop infrastructure and grow. But some of those established cities are absolutely not the fastest growers right now.
Yeah, sure.
Didn't you say in 1950 New York was the biggest metropolis on the planet?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it went from number one to today it's like number eight. So yeah it's, and the ones that have surpassed it, they're all in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the top seven are. In fact, number seven is Karachi, Pakistan, and it grew by 80% over a decade. I mean, an 80% growth in 10 years. Can you imagine that you move to Atlanta? And within 10 years...
Yeah, I moved to Atlanta about 10 years ago.
Imagine the population had grown by 80%. You'd be moving away from Atlanta.
Well, I mean, when you think about that, that's not even... That seems more than just a city growing.
Yeah.
That's essentially like a new city has been created.
Yeah.
In fact, it's great that you say that because there's another example. The Chinese megacity of Shenzhen has 12 million people in it. Now, in 1979, it had 30,000 people.
Oh.
30,000 in 1979. Today, 12
million. Wow, within a generation.
Million. Yeah.
So even more than Karachi.
Yeah, and it grew so fast and changed so much that it is often referred to as a city without history because it didn't have a chance to establish any. It was just, you think of it, you know, we talk about the singularity, how that's going to be an era of constant change where it is difficult to have a meaningful conversation about the now. This is it.
Oh, yeah.
This is it in city form.
Yeah. And it's problematic because a lot of these very fast growing areas are also some of the poorest.
Yes.
In the most struggling developing parts of the world.
Yes. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit and the host of issues that come with that. And also some of the reasons why that is happening. And they're understandable reasons, but that doesn't make it any less problematic. So, some of the megacities that, you know, like New York City, Tokyo, some of them, their growth rates have slowed over time. Like they're still growing. It's not like they're getting smaller or maintaining, but that growth rates started to drop. Whereas there are ones in other parts of the country or parts of the world, not country, that are increasing, like Asia and Africa in particular. So, we will likely see that those impoverished places are going to continue to have growth as people try to move to cities in an effort to chase opportunity.
Yeah, this is a thing that I think can be easily misunderstood. One of the things that I've read about megacities is that people often look at large urban areas and say, oh, we see a lot of poverty here. And then they interpret that as being that the large urban area is the cause of a lot of poverty. But that might not necessarily be the case. Another way of looking at it would be that the large urban areas where people come seeking economic opportunity.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it could be seen as drawing people from poverty who are trying to find a way to escape it.
Right. And in fact, the the two main contributors to megacity growth in these developing nations tend to be migration from rural areas or smaller cities into larger ones, with the hope that those larger cities do have this opportunity, and also high birth rates. Those would be the two things together. We're seeing in more developed nations, especially places like Japan, we're seeing not just a decrease in birth rates, but to a point where we're seeing negative growth.
A decrease in population,
yeah.
right.
So those are both factors, but the, like you were saying, it's exactly that case where one of the stories I was reading was about how in Nigeria you would have people who would live in a city go once a year to go back to where they came from, and everyone had a story to tell to make it sound like they are doing well, which would perpetuate this idea that the city was a place of opportunity. Even if the person wasn't doing well in the city, they didn't want to come back to their home and say they weren't doing well.
Sure.
And that perpetuated this idea of, I can escape poverty, I can make something of myself, I can be a success by moving to the city. And honestly, in a lot of cases, we're talking about cities that just get so flooded by people.
So quickly.
There's just no way to deal with that. There's not enough opportunity in that time span. Like, perhaps if it were over a longer time frame, it would be more manageable. But in a compressed time frame, in a matter of a couple of decades, that's just not realistic.
Right. So you could think of this as a lot of people who travel to cities seeking economic opportunity. Really, the reality is they end up sort of waiting in line for economic opportunity in cities.
All these musings and predictions that we're making about the ways that these populations might change and how people's lives might change because of them raise a few questions about what is going to happen in these cities and how they are going to adapt to this kind of stuff.
There's another question that comes up when we're considering the role of huge cities in the future. And this question is sort of related to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about the state of Georgia, mm-hmm. that Atlanta is in,
yes,
that it's kind of
so
like you have Atlanta, mm-hmm. and then you've got the rest of the state.
So it's like a little island inside of a larger like ocean.
Yeah, and if Atlanta keeps growing,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be kind of strange to think about it. So imagine a scenario where, I don't know, in the future, the population of the Atlanta metro area is three times the population of the rest of Georgia.
Okay.
In that case, what happens to the balance of power between the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia that is technically a part of and subject to?
Gotcha.
And you can extend that question basically to any kind of like power dynamic between cities and states or cities and countries. Mm-hmm. What happens when a city becomes so big and so powerful and its economic negotiating power is so large and its population is so large that it might be perceived as a threat to the authority of the jurisdiction in which it technically resides?
Sure. And this isn't a new question even.
One analogy might be like city-states in ancient Greece.
Sure.
Where, so you could have Athens or something, and that's not really like there is a country of Athens. It's a city-state. It's a city, yet it has enough power to exert a sphere of influence and project its power to the area around it.
That's madness. No, wait, that's Sparta.
Well, I do wonder, I mean, could we see a return to this kind of model?
Modernly, I mean, we kind of already are in some cities. If you take New York City as an example, as Swedish PhD candidate Kristan Ljungqvist did in her doctoral thesis for Uppsala University in 2014, and I really hope I pronounced those things correctly. Nice Swedish listeners, tell me if I was wrong.
You were way better at it than I would have been. I would have probably ended up saying something like Kirsten Lungfish, and that would have just been terrible.
I do love that name, Ljungqvist.
Ljungqvist.
No, wait, Vist.
Vist.
Yes. Ugh.
It's okay. It's all great.
Yeah.
That I said it wrong like 19 times before I got that one right, listeners.
The
thesis is called The Global City 2.0, an international political actor beyond
economism?
Economism? question mark. But in it, she argued that the powers wielded by such densely populated, you know, strong economy cities like New York have gone global. Their powers have gone global, that they make policies that affect climate change and pandemics and transnational crime and global poverty and terrorism. And she was saying that in New York City in particular, following 9/11, that the local government there has developed a security force that's larger than that of many countries, mm-hmm. Complete with ground-to-air defense systems and an intelligence force with permanent staff in Asia and the Middle East and Europe.
Hmm.
And, okay, if that just plain old freaks you out, then here's a gentler example. Cities' adoption of the Kyoto Protocol, which is a UN emission reduction plan that was written up way back in 1997. Youngquist says Toronto was the first place in the world to adopt these emission reduction targets, while lots of national governments were still trapped in debate. So she says that lots of cities have been able to pass better laws of this sort. It implies that modern cities, being more nimble and having more specialized interests, are capable of making and implementing far-reaching decisions a lot faster than larger governmental bodies.
And this is interesting to me specifically because we've been pointing out the complications that come into the fact that, you know, when we say city, we may be talking about a collection of different governments. And in some cases, it may just be that the one that is at the core of the city makes a decision, and that's going to cascade outward from there.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, it may be a collaboration between the various kinds of, you know, bodies of political officials to bring something like this to fruition.
Yeah. Another thing that seems interesting as a possibility to me is, what about the idea of merging megacities that transcend larger borders?
Like between two different states in the United States or two different countries even.
So imagine one example might be the I-85 corridor.
Yeah, that's...
You know, what if Atlanta eventually merges with the major cities of North Carolina and it really just kind of becomes continuous between them? I mean, it's a long time till something like that could happen,
mm-hmm.
but
I've
seen it imagined in, like, science fiction and
sure.
stuff.
Yeah.
Or you could imagine the bridging of, say, Atlanta and Chattanooga across the border from Georgia and Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then?
Yeah, and then, I mean, we already have examples of that, like Baltimore and D.C.
Yeah.
You know, we already have these examples where you have this imaginary dotted line that only exists on paper and but not in reality. And then, you know, how do you resolve those things? Things that where if one municipality were to make a decision, it would obviously affect the other one. So at what point do you say, listen, we have to come together and have this discussion because now we're no longer talking about something that's just going to affect us. It's going to affect you as well. So you should have a stake in this decision.
Yeah. Or even across country borders. You know, what if Toronto and Detroit, like, just filled in that little gap?
These are really interesting questions. And it is not just, you know, a hypothetical or thought experiment, nothing like that. I mean, it's becoming reality. And the idea of these really powerful cities kind of not necessarily throwing their weight around. I mean, the example you gave about Atlanta and Georgia is a great one. If you look at the political leanings of the state of Georgia, you'll see that Atlanta tends to go one way and the state of Georgia tends to go another way.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the rural population of Georgia is larger than the city of Atlanta. So ultimately, the people who live in Atlanta can sometimes feel in state or national elections like they aren't truly being represented. If that were to change, if the city of Atlanta's population were to exceed that of Georgia, the rural parts of the state, we might see that flip. And then we would have a situation where people in the rural parts of the state would feel like the big city folks are the ones making all the decisions.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's already like that in a lot of states, right? Where
sure.
they've got big enough cities where, you know, there are lots of rural parts of the state of New York, right? But New York City's New York City, and
mm-hmm.
it's going to outweigh almost any kind of concern that rural New York has.
At least, yeah. And I mean, when people say New York, I think almost 99 times out of 100 in casual conversation, if you're not in the state of New York and you say the words New York, you
You mean New York City.
Yeah, you're referring to New York City, which, ironically, might be New Jersey. So at any rate, this was really kind of an interesting conversation. We've got so much more to say, and we knew going into this that we were going to divide this up into two episodes. And in our second episode, we're going to explore more of the issues that megacities have. Also, we're going to look at some science fiction scenarios, one in particular, and discuss what would it take for it to become possible, or is it even possible? So you can tune in to our next episode for that. If you guys have suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, maybe there's a topic that you've just been dying to have us tackle, you gotta let us know about it. Send us an email. The address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus. Twitter and Google Plus, we are FW Thinking. Just search FW Thinking in Facebook search bar. We will pop right up. You can leave us a message there, and we will talk to you again about megacities really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.